So, good morning, everybody. Today is Saturday, August 10th, 2019. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We're not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We're not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Look at my list again here. As you know, most of you know, my name is Carol Werlius, and thank you for joining us today. In hopefully not being overly optimistic, but it does appear that our long-awaited RV is about to happen. My associate Jim Knox and I have decided to start giving you some instructions on how to use your contract trust to your best advantage. As I said, I'm sure many of you have lots of questions, so please write them down or press *6 to raise your hand during this call. We are going to start with some questions that we have received. And it's interesting, you know, we decided to do this about a week ago. It's interesting how many emails or calls I've gotten just this week about some of these very subjects. So I guess it's timely. Give me a second here while I look for Jim. There he is. There he is.
Hello.
Good morning, Jim. Yeah, there you are. Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning. I had a little tough time getting logged in this morning. It kept bouncing me out. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I've had that problem from time to time as well. So anyway, are you about ready to get started? I am.
I am ready.
Okay. And one of the questions that we've heard, even as recently as a couple of days ago, is Social Security. Some folks are concerned about losing their Social Security benefit because their Social Security number still shows up on trust bank accounts and the application for the EIN. As trustee of the trust, you are manager of the assets, not the owner. So let me give you an example. Suppose you're the manager of a local business. As manager, you have signature authority in the business bank account. You can write checks to pay your employees and vendors and other business-related expenses. You do not own the business, the bank account, or any other assets of the business. The business is not responsible for your personal debts, and you're not responsible for the debts of the business. As you would imagine, you would invite a whole lot of trouble if you started using that account for your own expenses. The same is true for the trustee of the trust. Like the business, you do not want to commingle your personal funds like Social Security with trust funds. And, you know, some folks have decided they are not going to continue to collect your Social Security benefit post-RV, but that's a personal decision. You know, you earned it. You have a right to it. So going back to the question, well, will this impact my Social Security? It absolutely will not impact your Social Security. So even if you've somehow got a lien from the IRS and they decided to attach your Social Security, they cannot go after your trust account if it's not yours. So just bear that in mind. Having Social Security and having trust, that's not a big deal. And along the same lines, Social Security is government assistance. You know, some folks receive government assistance for whatever reason. And that is different from a Social Security benefit. While you technically should still be able to receive it, you haven't earned it. And let's face it, you probably won't need it. And I don't want to sound like I'm moralizing, but if you don't have the money, if you don't need the money, why would you want to put yourself in that position to be dependent upon the for a government handout? Jim, you want to take over for a little bit?
Oh, sure. Where are we at? We're at government assistance. Did you do that one, or we're on business trust?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, we're on business trust number 3.
Thank you. Okay, business trust. Some time ago, we decided to remove the word business from our trust. The trust has not changed. In reality, it's still a business trust. We removed the word because it's caused some confusion with the bankers, who immediately assume you need to be registered with the state, et cetera. Which you are not, because you don't have to. You do, however, need to register with the state before operating the trust as a business enterprise. Now, the compliment that I was just in the bank 2 weeks ago, opening an account, and all I had to have with me was my CP575, known as the IRS, better known as your EI number, and my abstract, and there was no questions. And that was at Wells Fargo. And in the past, we've had to argue a little bit with them, but now they understand them. So naming your trust, this is an interesting one. This still seems to be a bit of a stumbling block for many of you. You are looking for privacy and anonymity. We suggest a strong-sounding name, you know, kind of like, remember the old TV series, Remington Steele?
Yes.
It's a strong name. Well, I often suggest naming it, naming the trust after a favorite pet. I would not recommend the Fluffy Trust. You should not use your own surname. You should not number the trust. Don't use the words enterprises or anything that sounds like a business. You should avoid those at all costs. You should also avoid a name that may be associated with you. For example, if you have a business named Lions Group, it is not a good idea to name the trust Lions Trust.
And, you know, I know that's a tendency that people want to do, right? A lot of people like to name things after themselves.
Sure, ego gets involved every time. Yeah, it's ego. Ego gets involved every time. But remember, we are trying to have an anonymity here, but we still want a strong-sounding name. And, you know, I have over a dozen trusts, and not one of them has a funky name. They all have fairly strong-sounding names. And some of them are acronyms, you know, that we've used from time to time that are fun. But they still sound very strong. So keep up, keep in mind that this is going to be through generations. So pick a name that's going to last for at least 50, 60 years.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, completing the trust. You know, Jim and I have gone to great lengths to make this an easy process for you. We give you very explicit instructions on the signing process. Any line that requires a signature has a name below it. If there's no name, it doesn't need a signature. Certain pages need to be signed in front of a notary, and this is very important. In front of a notary means you sign it when you're there. You don't sign it first at home and then take it to have somebody notarize. It doesn't work that way. Those pages and the notary pages are all flagged. The creator signs and dates certificates 1 and 2. This is very, very important, folks. Do not sign certificates 3 and 4. They are for future use. They're there. They're there for your future use, for future benefit. You do not need to sign them now. Actually, you will probably never sign them. We suggest you read the entire trust before you take it to the notary. And we have very explicit directions included in the trust package itself and on the website. It's, you know, it's not rocket science, but it is very important that it's done correctly. Jim, you want to talk about funding child trust? You want me to do that?
Why don't you take that one? I'll take the next one.
Okay. Many of you have set up additional trusts for family, projects, etc. Many of you will do the same post-RV. The big question is, how do I fund those additional trusts? There are two different scenarios with two different strategies. For those who wait until post-RV to create this trust, these trusts, it is a relatively simple process. When your trust was created, you exchange your assets, in this case the currency, into the trust for $21 and 100 trust certificate units. That was it. Easy breezy, no tax consequence. It works the same way It works the same way for funding additional or child trust. You and the mother lode trust exchange certain real business and or personal property assets, in this case dollars, into child trust XYZ. The amounts are listed on Schedule A. You exchange $100 and the mother lode exchanges an unspecified amount. You both receive certificates, and you can choose the amount of certificates, 50-50, 50 for the mother lode trust, 50 for you, 90-10, whatever. Child trust XYZ is now funded. At some point, mother lode relinquishes its certificates back to XYZ. Again, this is not a loan, but an exchange. For an IRS tax publication, if a bona fide transfer, sale, or exchange is made at arm's length in the ordinary course of business, the transaction will be assumed to be for consideration, not gratuitous. Consideration is not reducible to a value in money or money's worth, i.e. love and affection or promise and marriage, just to be wholly disregarded and considered totally gratuitous. In this case, it is not. It is an exchange, equal for equal, assets for certificates. Hey, Jim?
Well, that was quite a bit. So let's see here. Do we have any questions on that? I mean, this has been a biggie for quite some time here. There's many strategies we've talked about. So yeah. Funding a new child trust. Anybody have any comments or questions on that before we go forward? Nope.
No, the queue is empty. And before you got on the line, I don't know if you heard it. Folks, we are encouraging you to come up with your questions. Jim and I can talk for hours, obviously, since you all know that by now. But we don't know what's on your mind unless you tell us. You know, one person may have a question about an issue that's important to them, and somebody else may have an issue that's important to them. It's all going to be of interest to everybody else. So please, if you have any questions, raise your hand.
No hands raised, so I'll go forward.
Okay.
All right. Funding existing child trusts that have already been established is not quite so easy. We're assuming that we will not have an opportunity to open more than one new account on the RV day. We have long suggested that you request X amount of dollars for a holding or escrow account to fund those child trusts. When those child trusts were created, they were funded with the currency. In reality, the mother lode exchanged all of the currency. Now she has to disperse it in a lawful, legal way without creating taxable event. So like most financial transactions, we have to have a paper trail. You will write minutes noting that the XYZ Trust loaned Motherlode X amount of dinar, dong, etc. For that loan, Motherlode gave XYZ some of its certificates for collateral. Once Motherlode has the money from the RV, she repays the dollar amount of the loan currency to the XYZ and receives a paid in full receipt for her certificates back. You will, of course, have to determine how much money XYZ needs. This is a one-time deal, and the paper trail must be created and made as part of your trust paperwork. Samples will be available on the website. Any questions on that one?
No, not yet.
Well, we're doing a heck of a job then. Can I say?
I guess, really. We're better than we thought.
Yeah, really. Well, the next thing that we're going to talk about is going to be kind of off the cuff because, Carol, I've been going around and around and trying to figure out how to do some things for you. And there was, years ago, there was a publication. In fact, it was 1993, put out by Laughlin Associates that was based in Nevada. And since that time, the laws in Nevada have changed a lot. It's not near as good as it used to be. And that's why a lot of people are moving their stuff to Wyoming. But I found a guy, he's an attorney by the name of Jay Adkisson, and I'll put that on our website. In fact, I'm going to take some of his stuff, and I'm just going to go ahead and publish it on our website with his name, address, all that stuff, and his website. Well, there's one article called Red Ink, and it was written in 93. We've got a copy of it from way back when, and I've been looking at it. I thought about updating it quite a bit, and I don't think I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to actually take the original, put it on there, and then I'm going to put an addendum to it saying, well, this was how it was then. Some of this still works, some of this not so much, and I'll highlight all the things that don't work. The biggest challenge we have nowadays is people worried about lawsuits, and we've talked about charging orders here recently and how those are affected. And Simon Black, the guy that runs or owns Sovereign Man, had a video recently, and I got a hold of him, got a hold of it, and unfortunately I didn't get it downloaded quick enough. He took it back off the internet for me. I can get it back up, I guess. Anyway, he talks about how to do it in a foreign country. Well, we're not going to go down that road today. We may do that in the near future, but we're going to go down the road that we have in front of us, which is, what do we do now? The certificates of beneficial interest that you receive as the investor is the only thing that you have of value. So if there's a charging order against you and you have the certificates of beneficial interest, they have to come after you as the investor. If they come after you as the trustee, well, the trustee does not have the certificates of beneficial interest. So that's two different hats. And that's why we really push you to sign trustee, comma, and not as otherwise. It's called a limiter, and I do it on all of my stuff. I've been doing it for years. What that does, it tells the public that this document or whatever you did was done as a trustee, not as your personal self, but as trustee and not as otherwise. You didn't do it as the investor. You didn't do it as a man. You didn't do it as a woman. You didn't do it as a person, which is a big bone of contention with me. You did it as the trustee. So what we have to realize is that is the attorneys know some of this, but they know it all. And so they're going to try and go after you. Now, if they get a charging order, let's back up a few steps. What is a charging order? Well, if they get a judgment against you, they got a judgment. The charging order is the next step in court. You got to go back to court and ask for a charging order to effectuate the judgment. And then the court files a charging order. The charging order says that basically that anything that you disperse, anything that you own within that company, they own now. And that's not a good thing, really. It's a good thing if you're going after somebody, but it's not a good thing if you're on the receiving end. We're going to talk about being on the receiving end right now. So anything that you have in there, they're going to try and grab. There's nothing in there that you brought except for the $100 worth of currency, you know, $100 in other consideration. So the only thing they can really grab is any future disbursements. Well, the way the trust is set up is the trust can disperse to one investor, but not the other. It's at their discretion. Well, the court has a problem with that from time to time, so you may not want to do that. So let's say that you go ahead and you decide, well, okay, we've got a charging order against it, so we're just not going to disperse. Well, until you disperse, they don't get any money. The other part of this red ink article, which they don't talk too much about there, which is now something that's becoming very interesting, is the poison pill defense, which is kind of like a charging order, allowing the charging order to happen. And I wrote some time ago about that, and I've got that article someplace in my computer, and I will get it on our site. And the poison pill defense simply states that let them get a charging order. And if they get a charging order, they can't collect. However, the year that the charging order is issued, the full amount is taxable. So let's say they get a charging order for $100,000. And say they're in a tax bracket of, say, 20%. Well, that year they have to pay the IRS $20,000. Whether they get any money from you or not, they have to pay the $20,000. Well, that's what the poison pill is all about. So there has been a situation which I was not directly involved with, but I was witness to it, and it was against a person in a trust that I had not set up, but somebody had contacted me, wanted me to see if I could fix it. Well, it wasn't my trust, so I couldn't fix it. Nothing really to fix anyway. It was after the fact. But my advice was to them, well, they got a charging order. So what? Just don't disperse. And they didn't. And about 6 months, 7 months down the road, the attorney and the guy that got the charging order came over and met with the defendant's attorney. He says, look, we got to get something figured out here because we got this charging order, and now we have a taxable liability, and we don't want to pay it. Well, that's the attorney's fault. He should have done his homework. Bottom line is they negotiated. And what they wanted to do was to have a satisfaction of judgment and drop it down to almost nothing so they didn't have to pay that money to the IRS. Well, it was going to be something like $20,000 to the IRS. So they negotiated. The guy says, well, for $5,000, I'll sign your satisfaction and judgment that you pay me $5,000. So the defendant got $5,000 after he was sued. So the guy that sued him wouldn't have to pay $20,000 to the IRS.
I love it.
Yeah. See? So don't worry about some of this stuff. Just be aware of it. There's always ways to work through these things. There's a lot of court cases that say you can't do these things, but they've been done. So those little articles say it can't be done. Well, they better go look at history because it's been done. We have, you know, cases where it does work this way. So in defending your trust, just don't do anything, you know, that you shouldn't do, for one. Number two, if you do something wrong, well, we need to figure out how to fix it. We're not attorneys. We really can't help you. We can give you some suggestions to go to an attorney to protect you, or you can do it by yourself, you know, pro se. But the charging order is interesting because you can use that as you're about to be sued. You can tell them, well, look, you know, if you get a charging order against me, I'm not going to disperse. We're not going to pay anything out of the trust because, you know, you guys are suing me. So why would I want to pay anybody? So you're going to have a charging order, and if you get a $100,000 charging order, that means you got a $20,000 tax liability, which you have to pay this year. And then I would add to that, say, and by the way, as soon as you get the charging order, I'm filing a suspicious activity report against you to the IRS saying, hey, these guys got a charging order. Did they notify you? So, you know, and you just tell them, flat out what you're going to do, and you do it. And you do it. It's just not an idle threat. You do it. So the bottom line here is there's a lot of interesting ways to defend. And I'm going to scour the net, and I'm going to find these things. I find great pleasure in this, by the way, if you haven't figured out by my tone of my voice. I like putting this stuff out there because, you know, the legal profession, of course, we all know that there's not a lot of great people in the profession, but there are a few great people in the profession. And they're not all bad, in other words. But I like to point out some of the things that you can do, and those are the things I've had personal experience with. And then, Carolyn, I was talking the other day about some of my previous experience. When I lived in Alaska, I had a partner up there. His name was John, but it wasn't the same John. And we had some businesses, and we got into a situation where we needed an attorney. We wanted to do some things. And an attorney, all he would do, and he'd been with us for a while, is tell us everything we couldn't do. That's all he wanted to do is tell us what we can't do. Well, you can't do it that way. That doesn't work. You can't do it that way. And I got tired of that crap. So John and I met after the meeting, and I says, you know, this is BS. There's got to be a way to do this. Somebody's got the right way to do it. So we fired this guy, and we went shopping. It took us 6 months. We found a young guy that's just coming into practice, his own practice. And his comment was, well, I don't know, but I'm sure we can figure out how to do it. We hired him. And he was a very good attorney, and he did fix a lot of things for us. We were dealing with the oil companies, and they will bend you over so fast. It's unbelievable. They are nasty people to work with. And we had contracts. We were hauling stuff for them. Anyway, the same thing happened with our CPA. He just kept telling us, well, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. So we found a CPA. We looked at it. We did the same basic search, and we found a CPA that says, well, sure, we can do that. I don't know how, but I'm sure we can figure it out. Well, that's the kind of people you want. So when you go hire your legal team, your financial team, what you want to do is you want to find a group that can say, well, yeah, I'm sure it can be done. We just have to figure out how to do it. That's the kind of people you want to work with. You don't want to work with people who say, well, that can never be happened. You can't do that. Nobody's ever done that before. That just won't work. Walk away. Just walk away from them. Because they're going to be nothing but a pain in the butt, and they're going to be the biggest contributor to your financial demise that you've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there any questions on what I just said? Anybody?
No, it's amazing. No questions. Not Q&A, but I don't hear. I know this guy had a question for me the other day. Dean, I see you're on the line. Would you like to ask your question?
Yes, I would. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
I've got two main ones. First of all, when we're moving money from one trust to another, is the only way or the set way is to use a certificate or loan?
A certificate or, it all depends. You know, you can just do a straight loan, and the certificate would just be collateral.
Yeah, but if we're moving...
Go ahead.
For instance, if we're buying, if we're buying a home, and we move from the motherlode trust to a second trust, and then we use, you know, that second trust to buy the home. Then whenever we want to put a lien on it, do we use the mother load to put the lien or the second trust? Can the second trust that borrowed the money also put a lien on it?
Jim?
Yeah, not that way.
No.
You got the right idea. You just need to restructure that. There has to be a reason for something to be lien. In other words, there has to be somebody has to be owed money, or there has to be a worry, an interest of worry of creating a problem. So you put liens on things. So what you can do is, remember, you have the option on what kind of interest you're going to charge. It can be compound, which is the most sinful interest out there,
yeah.
Or it can be simple interest.
Yes.
The difference is, let me give you a quick synopsis. We'll go back to this question. Compound interest, if you borrow $100,000 over the term of 30 years, you pay back over $300,000 at 10% interest. Simple interest, if you borrow $100,000 over the term of 30 years, you pay back $110,000.
Okay.
So in the state of Nevada, they have a law now. I don't think it's changed, but they used to have no usury. So which means you can charge any amount you want. So let's say that you have a trust that loans another trust some money, and it wants to put a lien against that trust for that amount. It can say, okay, here's a note and a lien, and I'm charging you 50% interest, but make a simple interest. And a compounded, you say the note's due in a year. So at the end of the year, you got to pay back $150,000 if you follow the note. So see, you can over encumber that second trust with debt. So what happens is, if somebody comes after that small trust, the second trust, we'll call the child trust, after the child trust, and of course, now you need to record the loan by the UCC-1. You just go down.
Need to what?
You file a lien against it. You file a record at the county office saying that you have a lien against there. It has to be a public record to protect yourself.
Okay.
You can release the record after the fact, release the lien after the fact. So the reason you do that, let's say that there's an incident and the attorneys go shopping and see how many assets that trust has got, or that company, known as the company, and see if it's suable. Well, if they go and look and they say, well, shoot, this company's only worth about $100,000. The house worth $100,000 in the trust. But it's got a lien for $150,000. Well, I don't think I'm going to sue that. And, the attorneys, they look at things like this. Say, well, I'll take out a contingency because I'll get so much more money if I take this on contingency. Well, there's nobody like that, and the hard-headed plaintiff decides he wants to go after it anyway. The attorney's going to charge him by the hour. So that's going to be, that in itself will cost a lot of money, so the guy's probably not going to sue. So you want to always have a mechanism set up to where you can put a lien against your other entity. It's recorded so the public knows it. So if anybody's going to try and come after you, they can't. Or they shouldn't, because they have to pay the debt off first, because the first lien holder gets paid. So in my example, the mother of the trust had a lien against the child trust that has a piece of real estate in it, because it got so much interest it's owed that the mother load trust has to get paid first. So if they were going to sue, they have to pay off the mother load trust to be able to go get the house. Well, if the amount that the house is worth is less than what they owe the mother load trust, they're not going to do that. So it may be a little bit confusing, but you see, the point is, anytime you borrow money, you need to make sure that there's a lien and it's recorded. Now, at the end of that time, you don't need to do that anymore. You just go down and file a satisfaction of record, satisfaction of lien, satisfaction of payment, whatever they call that. You go down to the doc and get the document, and it says, okay, this has been taken care of, and the lien is now null and void.
Okay, now, two questions on that. Does, when the mother load puts a lien on it, does that make them, the mother load, vulnerable to where they could come through the child trust and get to the mother load?
No. No, it does not, because the mother load is an entity that simply has a lien.
Okay.
Now, you may want to do one more step than to have the mother load not be the primary one that has the lien. There's other ways around that, and that's a little bit more complicated. I'm going to draw and graph all this stuff out. I've already started on it.
Great.
It'll be It'll be on the web. We've added so much, by the way, folks. We're going to segue. We'll come right back here. We're going to segue right now. We've added so much to the website the last 10 days, you'll be surprised. So when you get a chance, go to the website. All right, now back to the question. So
yeah,
there's more than one way to do it. You just have to structure it. So anybody that's going to be looking at it says, I'm not going to deal with this guy. There's no money there. There's too many liens against all that property. Now, your question was, who gets what? Well, if the mother load, and Carol, you jump in here when you can, the
sure.
mother load trust, which is going to borrow the currency from the child trust and gets the certificates as collateral, then when it exchanges, it pays that money back and gives the certificates back because the collateral is no longer needed.
Right.
Okay, same with a real estate deal.
Well, so on that, whenever you say whenever it's no longer needed, that being what would cause that, when the property's paid off or what, Jim?
Well, in the first example I was saying when you create the lien is you were trying to put a lien on
yes.
the house that exceeded the value so nobody would sue you. It just is not attractive to an attorney.
Right.
You can release that lien prior to selling the house. Just
okay.
release it. And then you can market the house out of there.
I see. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, so that's the technique is you use creative financing to create the legal mechanism to make your property, whatever it may be, not attractive to an attorney.
Okay.
The whole idea is to make your assets judgment-proof.
Now, there you go.
Yes, I understand that. I'm just, really shady on just how to do it, and you're helping a lot. Now, as far as changing from one trust to the other, from the mother load to, say, the child trust, is the only way to do that is by certificate or loan?
If in your case, you already told me that you want to get another trust post-Derby.
Right.
That will be a brand new trust. The first, your mother load is just going to fund that one. It's going to get some certificates, it's going to make an investment into that trust just like you put your assets in the mother load to begin with.
So we don't have to have a loan or anything to do that?
Not on a new trust. If it's an existing secondary trust, then you do have to go the longer route. But if it's a brand new, which is what I plan to do, and I know Jim is as well, we're all going to, let's face it, folks, we're probably all going to buy new houses. So
right.
wait until the RV, get and fund a new trust post-RV. It's a lot simpler, it's a lot cleaner, and it's the same effect. That secondary trust, well, let's say real estate trust, the real estate trust will have enough money in it to buy that house free and clear. It doesn't owe the mother load trust any payments. It doesn't owe the mother load trust any interest.
Very good.
Yeah, and it's a really clean way of doing it. And like I said, that's what I plan on doing. And I know Jim does as well.
Very good. I appreciate that.
Okay. And, you know, that brings something up. Somebody emailed me earlier today that he would like to put his new real estate into a revocable living trust post-RV. And he asked me how to do that. Well, frankly, you know, we don't do revocable living trust, so I don't really know that method. And secondarily, why would you want to use a revocable trust? And
right.
the biggest reason for trust, like we just talked about, is asset protection.
Right.
Revocable living trust gives you no asset protection. So he's going to get more privacy, more asset protection with one of our trusts rather than a revocable trust.
Dean, did I cover this okay for you? Do we need to go a little further on that? Do you got that?
I think so, Jim. But I still got the question, for instance, if we went from a house to wanting to buy a new car, and I, you know, had to do that without starting another trust, I can move it, say, to a LLC, move the money to an LLC and buy it? Is that possible? Well, or do I need the LLC to make a loan to them, or initiate a loan to the mother load?
Okay. Well, first off, you don't want to put a car in an LLC. I have all my vehicles in irrevocable trust.
Okay. I'm sure that's by far the best way. I'm still hung up on the way to move from one trust to another.
Okay, we're going to talk about the car, then Carol's going to jump in and try and help me out explaining it better. So on the car trust, it's just like we said a minute ago. You create a new trust, put the car in there, the mother load funds it, the mother load gets certificates, they got the collateral. They put a lien against that car.
Yeah, I understand.
You want to get as much insurance as possible, and then you have to have in the car, you have to have from the trustee, which could be you're wearing a different hat here, the trustee of the trust has to write a minute and has to put it in the car saying that the trust owns the car and the trustees have deemed to be a responsible individual, and therefore you have the right to drive the automobile.
Okay. That helps.
We give you that. We give you permission to drive to put in the car.
Yep.
Say again, Carol.
When you do a vehicle trust with us, that's one of the things that we provide is a permission to drive slip. So
okay.
Put in the car with that minute. If you ever get stopped, it's not my car, officer. It belongs to a trust. Here's my authorization to be driving it.
Very good. I appreciate that, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, this is why we're changing our format on our conference calls. We're not trying to sell you anything. We're trying to get you up and running. And we're going to be doing this now, and we're adding so much more to the website. We're beyond the sales. We're beyond all that, which we really didn't need to sell, but we had plenty of business. What we're trying to do is get information out there. We have come to the conclusion we're not doing that job well enough. So we're buckling up on that. We're doubling down on getting the information out there. We're redoing everything. I mean, the website's going to be changing a little bit here shortly. And some people notice that, okay, the colors changed because I wasn't happy. Carol definitely wasn't happy. With some of the colors on there, they were hard to read, so we changed a bunch of stuff. And we changed some of the format. We're allowing everybody to read the blogs instead of just the members. And we've added a lot of content. And now we're going to have an area that's going to be dedicated nothing but to what we talked about today, how to operate the trust. Here's some tricks. Here's some things. Here's some articles. Here's the attorneys that say you can do it. Here's some court cases that show you what you don't want to do. Here's some court cases that show you what you can do. So we've added, I don't know, 40, 50 pages to the website in the last 10 days.
Folks, I'm sorry, Jim, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were done.
Yeah, I'm done. Go ahead.
Okay. You know, for those of you that listen regularly, and most of you that here are the same names and telephone numbers that I see every couple of weeks, and we really do appreciate that. But I think you also recognize that Jim and I have worked very, very hard to bring you the information that you need to, number one, make the decision to purchase a trust from us, and number two, how to operate it. And that's why we're doing this. I doubt that there's any other website out there that is nearly as complete as ours.
For sure.
I'm really not wanting to pat ourselves on the back, but just in looking around and from what I hear from other people, the level of support that we give you, I think, excels anything that anybody else out there is doing.
You know, to compliment that, I think anybody that's ever called me, sometimes I'm grumpy because I'm working too hard. And, of course, you have to understand that my health isn't the best. And so I'm in pain all the time. I've been in pain for 20-some-odd years. I broke my neck, folks. I broke my back. I broke my neck. I've had 9 surgeries. So, yeah, I'm going to be grumpy once in a while, especially in the mornings. I don't even like looking at myself in the mornings. I don't even like being around myself in the mornings because I'm so grumpy. But we don't generally, we will, if we don't can't take your call right then, we'll call you back. We're pretty, sometimes it takes a day or so, but we'll call you back. There's been a couple of people I haven't called back, but they eventually says, well, I'm tired of waiting. I'm going to call them back again. They call me and finally take the call because I can at that moment. We will call you back. And I generally will email people back the same day if they email me. And if there's things that I've had to do, you know, a couple of changes on a couple of trusts, things have happened with people, it may take me 5 or 6 days to get that done. But remember, I have in the queue, I have new clients that are waiting all the time. So we try and get those done as fast as possible, and we try and keep up with everybody's requests as quick as we can. But that being said, I have one more thing that Carol and I have not fully ironed out yet, but we're going to discuss it a little bit. Because
Hold on. Before you do that, Dean, have we answered your question sufficiently?
Yes, you have. You've really helped. But I've got one more question.
Okay.
You changed, of course, everything on the website, but I've been there, you know, in the last few days, and it's hard to find where the changes are. Is there some way that stars what they fall under or where you've made the changes?
No, I haven't thought about that, but I guess I should do that. I'll find a way to put the news. In fact, what I'll do, I just figured out how to do it. I'll put a special tab, new stuff, last 10 days. And then I'll hyperlink that over there, and I'll put a date that I put that in there. And then every 10 or 15 days, I'll delete that new and go to the next new. So you'll have a tab say new stuff. So you
that will really help me.
Yeah, it will help me too, because I can't remember half the stuff I put in there. I'm working hard on this stuff. I mean, we're really working hard on this. But, yeah, okay, well, let's do that. That's a good idea. I'll make a note right now.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate all your help. Bye-bye.
Bye, Dean.
And, Jim, we've got one caller waiting, but why don't you go ahead and talk about what you're going to talk about?
Well, it's just a quick thing. You and I have discussed having a trust set up just for the certificates of beneficial interest. Folks, what I'm talking about here is with all of these people and all these articles about the investor having these certificates of beneficial interest, and they're going to lien that. If there's a disbursement made in the trust to the certificate holder, then that money goes to the lien holder. Well, there is Simon Black and I talked a while back, and one of the things that he said is, well, you know, what we do with our international stuff, because we have an initial business company and then we have an initial trust, which I used to do that. Carol did the same thing years ago. They would just move the certificates, the corporate certificates, into the trust. Now, since the corporation now is basically owned by the trust, it can disperse to the trust, but it's not due to the public. So, therefore, it held up on charging orders in British Virgin Islands. Now, I'm doing research on that for the domestic issue. I think it will work. So we thought, well, shoot, if we had a little trust, unregistered, no EI number, nobody knows about it, so we got to court, and we moved our interests, our certificates of beneficial interest from all of our trusts into that, that might be a unique way of protecting everything. So we're going to research that, and we're going to come up with a conclusion on that by this time, by the next phone call. I want you to think about that. If you guys have any comments on that, send them to security@indicatorinformation.com and let me know what your information is you may have or questions you have on that particular thing. So we're working through that. Okay, what's the next question this person has got?
All right. Hi, Sandy. Are you still hanging on?
I think I got some of it answered when you were talking to Dean. And but I want to make sure that I understand it this way. Okay, I have my mother load, and I will be coming post-RV for the house to put a house in. Now, do I make sure that when I do the cashing out of the money that I put anything that I have to I tell them I want a pass-through account? do I have to have a certain amount of money that's going to be in a pass-through account? Do I tell them that all this money could possibly be going through to a pass-through account for other fundings?
Okay, Sandy, are you talking about funding a secondary trust that you already have, or post-RV you're going to get another trust?
Well, you tell me which is the best route. If I wanted to buy a house,
I will tell you what we just told Dean. Post-RV, like, I know most of us want to buy houses. Like Jim, I've got half a dozen other trusts. I don't want to use those right away. I mean, I'll fund them for something. But I want to buy a house, and I want this to be as clean and easy as possible. My mother-in-law trust is going to fund my real estate trust, period. Post-RV, just an exchange, just the way you did your first trust, right? So the mother-in-law trust is going to fund the real estate trust. The real estate trust is then going to purchase a new house, and it will be titled, the new house will be titled in the name of that trust. So
There's
nothing about holding accounts or pass-through for this. Pass-through is really only effective when you have other existing trusts that you want to fund.
Okay, because you helped me set up an account that's for my grandchildren.
Yes.
So I will need to fund that. So that would need to go in. I would have to say I have a pass-through account that I want so much money to go into.
Yes.
Do I tell them? Will I give them how much at that time?
I think you're going to have to.
Okay.
How else will they know? How else will
they
know?
Right. Okay. Well, in case anyone is listening, this is for future business for you. I will say, I'll pat the two of y'all on the back because I have listened. Now, I've had Mike started out with many trusts in my family. A lot of people in my family have this trust with Carol and Jim. We started out the very first one purchased in 2011. And I will say I've listened to other trusts to see that we have the right one. And I can tell you we do. And I can tell you that no one is out there helping any of us. Or I've gone back to them. I didn't purchase any of theirs, but they're not helping like Carol and Jim. So I'm just saying I am so pleased that I was turned on to the two of y'all, okay?
Well, thank you, Sandy. We appreciate that. And I'll pass it on to Jim Jenkins also.
Okay, yes. You tell him I love him dearly, okay?
I will. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Jim, I don't see any other questions here, but there are a couple of things that I would like to maybe end our call on. As we mentioned on our last call, we do have a special right now. We're not really into a sales mode, but some of you who are listening to this or will be listening on YouTube would like to know what our trust costs. They are $14.95 until September 11th, at which time the price will go up. But until then, we are offering some special financing. So instead of $14.95, we're going to charge you a whopping $5 carrying charge, but we can do two payments of $750 each or three payments of $500 each. We know a lot of you who will be listening need to get something done. I just can't afford to do it right now. So we're just trying to make it easy for as many people as possible to get set up beforehand. That's one thing I just wanted to mention. One thing we do need to be very, very clear about, we're talking about mother-load trust and all these other trusts that you may or may not have. The mere existence of the mother-load trust is very, very private. It is your personal business. It should only be known to you and your closest financial advisors. No checks, no debit cards, no online banking. I doubt that you will have the opportunity to open more than one account at your exchange appointment, other than perhaps a pass-through account we just talked about. Sweep accounts, separate currency accounts, and accounts for additional trusts will most likely follow on subsequent appointments. So when this happens, and praise God, let's hope it happens this week. Like, we're all hoping it will. You still need to be ready when you go in. And you are going to have to pick a financial team. And just because you start with Abbott Downing because they're going to be convenient and they're associated with Wells Fargo doesn't mean you have to stick with them. It's like anything else. You're going to have to interview these people and see if it's a fit for you. Ask them the very pointed questions. If you don't like their answers, go somewhere else. It's just like when you, let's say you're going to go see a dentist because you got a recommendation from a friend. Well, if you talk to this guy and he says, well, I want to pull all your teeth out. Oh, no, I think I'll go find somebody else. You have to make that decision if these people are going to work for you and do the things you want them to do and people that you're comfortable with. And, you know, that's my soapbox. Jim, you like to say something before we close?
Sure. Okay, we're going to talk about the website real quick. It's IndicatorInformation.com, IndicatorInformation.com. All right, on here we've added what Carol was just saying. You scroll down from the main page, and you'll see it says New Contract Plus Payment and Referral Program. And it talks about what she just said. And below that, we have the new pricing, effective 9/11 of 2019. So there's where your new pricing will be going up. So effective September 11th, we're raising our prices. And then, of course, below that, we talk about the six shields, the six. By the way, Carol, six is coming soon.
Yes, I know six means six.
That's a personal jab, folks. Anyway, and then we have some of our clients. If anybody wants to write a little deal and say, you know, how happy they were this, we have all happy clients. We have a list of about 8 or 12. We'd like to have a few more on there, little testimonials. We'll put you on there.
Sandy, if you would like to write down what you just mentioned, we'll be happy to put it on the website.
Okay, yep. And that'd be great. And then we also have new applications on here, and I want to talk briefly about the new website, which seems like it's taking forever to get done. Well, it is taking forever to get done because we don't know what we don't know and how to make that thing work right. We have, as most of you know, John Newell, my business partner, good friend, passed away this year right in the middle of that thing, and we've had to try and find some people, and I went through five or six people. Nobody seems to be able to do what we were trying to do, but we finally figured out how to make it work 90%. So this week was a bit of a tough week because we had to get some stuff on the web, on our website that we've been procrastinating. So there's a new tab called Legal Cases. And if you just click on the tab itself, Legal Cases, you'll see there's a whole bunch of stuff there. There's also a pull-down as you touch the Legal Cases, Article 1, Section 10. And on that one there, it actually has part of the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, explaining all this stuff. So that's some of the new stuff we've added. And then we've added some stuff under trust operation. And then, we are adding a whole bunch of new blog entries. But this website is we just changed a couple things. I'm going to be changing some more. I see some things I don't like. I'm going to go ahead and work on that this weekend and try and get it all done. But the website has, my favorite word, has a plethora of knowledge. And
I agree.
We've been working hard to bring the latest and the greatest, and that's why we're doing this. So with that being said, my name is Jim Knox. I work on the West Coast, and I'm in Oregon, and don't hold that against me. I'm only here temporarily. I'm moving. But right now I work from 9 to 6, Monday through Friday. I try not to work weekends publicly. I work weekends very hard because it's a time that I don't have to work on a lot of stuff because I can't get EI numbers, so I can't do the trust, so I always wait till Monday, yada, yada, yada. So I try and spend most of my weekends catching up on the website and our stuff. And so my phone number is 503-583-6791. And it's my email security@IndicatorInformation.com. Carol?
Well, thank you, Jim, and thank you, as always, for your very able assistance. Thank you, folks, for listening. We do appreciate your attendance. My name, again, is Carol Worlius. My telephone number is 425-820-8090. I am in the Central Time Zone in Oklahoma, I also like to work between 9 and 6. And again, I don't like to work weekends either. You know, I still have, we have family, we have other obligations. So you guys should enjoy your weekend as I will try to enjoy mine. We are hoping, as we've mentioned, that this is going to be our week. If it is, we get 800 numbers, we will send out an email blast. Any questions, please give us a call. Jim and I are, like we just said, available most of the time. We look forward to working with you, and go RV, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.